This is Audible.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Solo, a Star Wars story. By Mer Lafferty. Read for you by Mark Thompson. It is a lawless time. Crime syndicates compete for resources, food, medicine, and hyperfuel. On the shipbuilding planet of Corellia, the foul Lady Proxima forces runaways into a life of crime in exchange for shelter and protection. On these mean streets, a young man fights for survival, but yearns to fly among the stars. Prologue. Han summons speed, but his boots can only run so fast. He had meant to be on time, but there had been a Sabacc game going on, and most everyone respected the need for a good game of Sabacc. Anyone worth playing Sabacc with, anyway. And he was on time, if you considered half an hour late to be on time. And who counted half hours anyway, when you're meeting a shady back-alley dealer in a shady back-alley in the poorly lit hours of the morning? Unfortunately for Han, Kilmo, the shady back-alley dealer, was waiting for him. He apparently counted those half hours. Han came skidding to a halt in front of him, his engineer boots sliding in some industrial goo. He grinned a hello, hoping his charm would win him some points here. "Hey, Kilmo, you're looking good," he said, barely recognizing the tall, lanky human lurking in the shadows. A couple of larger shadows moved behind him. And Kilmo's friends. Hey. Friends? Lady Proxima had said nothing about Kilmo bringing friends.
"You're late,"
Kilmo rumbled. He sounded even taller than he was. Han wouldn't have said someone could sound tall, but that was Kilmo for you. He moved into the light, his pockmarked face half hidden by greasy blonde hair. "Only a little bit," Han agreed amiably. "But I'm here now, and I've got what you need." He winked, hoping they could see he was no threat. One of the tall shapes behind Kilmo stepped forward. It looked like a Sabbatou, gaunt, skeletal, and skin the rare pure white, indicating they were genderless. Han had never seen a white Sabbatou before. But no matter the color, he thought it would be a good idea to keep his eyes on the claws. He really didn't want to deal with the claws on either their hands or feet. At all. Ever.
"Less talk," they said. "More showing."
Han fished around in his right-hand pocket, pulled out 5 small metal vials, and showed them to Kilmo.
"The finest hyperfuel credits can buy."
Kilmo reached out his hand eagerly, but Han jerked his away.
"If you brought the credits, that is."
The Sabbatou seemed to be the brains of the outfit, because while Kilmo's eyes gleamed with greed, their ugly face frowned, adding at least 2 more degrees of ugliness to it.
"We agreed to 7 vials of refined coaxium."
Han's eyes went wide.
7?
He looked at his hands and made a show of counting the vials.
3, 4, 5? I could have sworn she gave me 7.
The Sabbatou stepped forward, flexing their claws, and Han took a quick step back.
Hang on! Let me see if I misplaced them," he said, holding up one hand to stop the advance, as his other hand grasped the coaxium.
He rooted around in one trouser pocket, and then the other one.
awkwardly reaching across his body, while his right hand tightly grasped the treasure the gangsters wanted. His fingers brushed another vial, and he fished it out, sighing in relief.
"Ah, I misplaced it," he said triumphantly. "Here you go."
"That's still only 6,
Kilmel said, finally catching on.
"Where's the last one?"
"Well, I'm sure Lady Proxima will accept a reduced payment for a reduced number of vials," Hans said. "You were going to pay 41,000 for 7? How about 20,000 for 6?
The gang advanced as one, and Han backed up, scrabbling for another answer.
18? 16! Give me a number. I can be
Uh-oh.
He had backed into something. It wasn't a wall, but it was about as solid, and a lot angrier. If he'd thought Kilmo and his friends were large, they were nothing compared with this person. Another human, a man, but bigger than any he had ever seen. The person was enshrouded in shadow, but Han could feel the muscles move under his skin, like busy rocks putting their affairs in order before an avalanche. Hands fell on his shoulder, and he staggered under the weight.
"Another friend?" he asked, smiling weakly and looking up. That's when Kilmo hit him.
The first punch landed squarely on his left eye, rocketing his head backward and making him see stars in the overcast sky. The second attack was the lucky one, though. It was a 1-2 that glanced off his nose and hit him in the gut. It was lucky not because the punches didn't hurt. His eyes watered from the pain, and he doubled over, desperately trying to get his breath back. But because they drove him backward into the man who held him. Since Kilmo had been so helpful as to give him some extra force, Han drove back with his elbows as he hit the man behind him. He would have liked to slam his head back and break the guy's nose as well, but the guy was too tall. Besides, Han was doubled over from the force of the blow to his stomach. But he could still hit the guy behind him, so he too could feel the pleasure of a gut punch. As Han had hoped, the man staggered backward, doubling over and losing his grip on Han. The coaxium vials fumbled through Han's fingers and rolled to the ground as he forced himself to run, still doubled over. At least hunched over in pain was a good position to avoid the Sabatou's attempt to grab him as he scrambled away. He gave one last mournful look at the coaxium, now being gathered by Kilmo's greedy hands. "Blast!" he said under his breath. Except it was more like a croak, since his breath hadn't returned. He hadn't wanted to leave without the payment. Not having the credits would be a problem when he returned to Lady Proxima. But if Han had learned anything in his years on Corellia, it was to get away with your life first, and then later you could deal with all the other problems that getting away had caused. His middle stopped spasming, and he took in a great whoop of air. Han straightened up, stretched his legs, and ran.
Chapter 1. The pre-dawn light began to tentatively touch the pills of Coronet City, making the dark gray connected islands somewhat lighter gray before the sun would rise and turn them to their glory of, well, a little bit lighter gray than that. The city was always gray in some shade or other. Through the dark gray, Han sought an answer to the question that seemed to come up a lot. How was he going to get out of this with his life? Kilmo had not been content with letting him go. After he and his gang had gathered up the metal vials, they'd started after him. All in all, this mad dash for his life was not unlike all the other mad dashes for his life. Adrenaline surged as he ran down the alley, dodging trash, boxes, leaking canisters of... he didn't want to know. Feet, human and non-human, pounded the street behind him. Ahead lay Naro Sinar Boulevard, one of the bridges that connected the island pills of Coronet. He aimed to cross it and hit the alley on the other side, lose the pursuers in the maze of power generators and desalinization units. It was a solid plan. One that had saved him countless times in the past. He definitely didn't want to move from the shadows into the street that had just started to wake, with L1G droids powering on and getting to work. But something caught his eye. Kilmo had been driving an M68 Landspeeder. Shiny, brand new, and just sitting there.
I guess you don't worry about leaving your speeder in a bad part of town when you're what makes the town bad, Han thought.
Still, Kilmo should have known better than to leave a street racing quality speeder, an open air model at that, just sitting there with only its security system to protect it.
This speeder was treasure.
Treasure that would lead to freedom and a ticket away from this grimy and downtrodden life. He threw himself out into the street, dodging around the tall droids, some of them protesting that he was impeding their work. He hoped they would shield him from his pursuers, but there weren't a lot of droids or people out at this time of day. When he reached the speeder, he ducked down and rolled under it, panting and watching. Feet wandered past his hiding place, most of them human engineering boots and droid feet. No surprise. The best barely living wage jobs were in the factories. The Corellians were famous for starship designs and construction. Most jobs on the world had to do with building starships, testing the mechanical and electrical parts, and designing them. And those jobs tended to work you to death. They were marginally better than the other jobs on the planet. No fish guts. The local jobs that paid less consisted of fishmonger, sailor, and thief. Han, like most orphans, outcasts, and runaways in Coronet City, held the last job. Most respectable jobs had dried up since the Empire had claimed the planet as its own and put its citizens to work building Imperial ships. Gangs and crime had risen in the subsequent years, as more and more desperate people looked to find a way to feed themselves. And there were the rat gangs, taking orphaned and poor kids to their bosom, offering food and credits for lifted goods. Joining the White Worms had seemed like a great idea at the time. A family to replace the one he'd had, or at least a place he could sleep off the streets. Unfortunately, this family also came with danger on the street, beatings within the grimy lair, and a constant reminder that you were worth much less than the clothes they put on you and the portions they grudgingly gave you. And if the authorities caught you outside doing the worms' dirty jobs, you were on your own. No one would come and help. Han had fallen into this life as a boy, and there was still no end in sight. Imperial feet wandered by the speeder, white boots stepping with smart certainty. He hoped they would keep his pursuers at bay, but no such luck. Kilmo and his gang soon came into view. Their pace slowed somewhat, likely due to the Imperials, but they still came. Human feet, Sabatoo claws, three legs belonging to one being, and then a tail sliding in the street. He hadn't even seen whom the latter feet had belonged to, but he guessed they had been ready as backup for Kilmo. They hurried toward him, coming closer and closer, and Han held his breath, knowing that if they caught him, he couldn't get away again. They'd probably kill him right there in the street, claiming to have found a thief. They weren't entirely wrong about that, but technically they were the thieves this time. The feet paused. They were so close, Han could see that the Sabatoo needed a pedicure, badly. They had a split claw that oozed, as if it had recently been tearing at something. It looked painful, but Han couldn't make himself drum up too much sympathy, as he wondered who had been at the other end of those claws. He swallowed nervously and kept perfectly still. If Kilmo decided to search for Han and his speeder, Han would have an entirely new set of problems very quickly. Then, the feet moved on, disappearing down the alley. That should be all of them. Han popped up and looked around. Imperials were gone. The thugs were gone. Then he looked at the console of the speeder. He grinned and hopped inside. A gritty metal taste filled Han's mouth as he held his light between his teeth to see in the early dawn. He took his tools in his hands and smiled to himself. It was child's play, really. Especially because he'd been doing this kind of thing since he'd been a kid.
Alarm,
he muttered. He bypassed the alarm before it could even wake up to alert anyone. And then broke through the security system. He shook his head, the light bobbing back and forth across the console. Whatever Kilmo paid for his security system, it was too much. He was about to learn an expensive lesson. Once security was disabled, Han reached under the steering wheel. His hands knew what they were doing. They moved almost without him thinking about it. Switch this, push that aside, strip a mechanism down to the wires. With surgical precision, he united two wires and gave them a twist.
Come on,
he urged. The wires sizzling, but nothing happening. He popped his head up and looked around, seeing Kilmo's back only a few meters away.
Come on,
he said a third time, giving the wires another twist. The wires dug into his fingertips, sparking on contact, and the slight shock sent a charge of excitement up his arms. The speeder hummed to life, a gentle purr that didn't even alert anyone to the theft that was about to happen. Han quickly familiarized himself with the console, his fingers dancing over the switches. He slammed a lever, and underneath him the repulsor lift engine flared, lifting the speeder. It wobbled briefly, and then steadied. Han reached into his jacket pocket and produced his two lucky golden dice, attached by a chain. The moment he took to hang them from the windscreen was not wasted time. He ignited the rear thrusters and was gone. The speeder was his now. The theft was masterful. Clean and swift. Masterful and swift, yeah. But Han wasn't clean at all. His face was coated in ash, stuck to his skin with sweat, and the blood smeared around his nose and lip. His left eye throbbed from Kilmo's recent punch. But nothing could diminish the utter elation he felt as the speeder took him away from the gang that still searched for him, hoping to finish what they'd started. He drove into the dawn, urging the engine faster, ignoring the shouts of protest behind him. They soon dissipated, and he hit the bridge, luxuriating in the wind in his face, the smell of brine on the air, the breakneck speed he reached. This was the life he needed. Not skulking around tunnels doing errands for a crime boss. He thought of the only place that deserved the word home, despite how dubious. Han had grown up in the lair of the White Worms, placed a favela in the underbelly of Coronet City. Where Coronet City was the gray of ship hulls and circuit boards, coated with the grime of any industrial or manufacturing area, the favela was the gray of filth and despair, with a metallic tang of danger. The place he wanted desperately to drive away from. But then there was Kira. He smiled wryly, the drying blood on his lip cracking, picturing the look on her face when they were free. He couldn't leave her here. He just couldn't. If she'd been in the same position, she wouldn't leave him. He didn't listen to the small doubt in his head that said he wasn't entirely 100% sure if that was true. But Kira was like all the kids the White Worms have raised. A survivor. They had to be. Still, he wouldn't have been able to face himself if he'd left her. With a sigh, he changed course and headed into the favela. He slowed a bit, trying to look less like a thief getting away with the best lift of his life, and more like a respectable man heading to work in the factories, building a respectable Star Destroyer for the respectable Empire.
never mind that he looked nothing like a respectable man right now.
He wiped his sleeve across his nose to try to clean up some of the blood, but he couldn't tell if the blood transferred to the sleeve or if he'd just wiped more dirt on his face.
Forget respectable, then. It was boring. He revved the engine again and picked up speed, dodging sleepy merchants carrying barrels of fish and bolts of cloth. He wove in and out of traffic, leaving the slower-moving vehicles behind him as if they were standing still. He couldn't help but let out a whoop of joy. Speed was life. Speed was everything. The city became more decrepit as he got to the outskirts. The buildings were broken down. Some roofs collapsed. Some slums built from only metal struts and canvas walls. He thought he spied some feet sticking out from a trash receptacle and sped on, frowning.
It wasn't his problem, and he hadn't recognized the feet anyway. The area got poorer and dirtier as he neared the den.
For the last time, he thought, maybe he'd be lucky. Maybe the gang had already gone to bed. Nocturnal beings tended to do that when the sun rose, after all. And the white worms hated the sun more than they hated being cheated out of coaxium payments. He still needed a plan to get out of that problem. The speeder slowed to a stop, and Han jumped out. He regarded the vehicle briefly. He'd already destroyed the installed security system, so at this moment anyone could steal it from him fair and square. He could cobble together his own security eventually, but not right now. If the gang saw this, they'd take it. Nothing belonged to you when you worked for the White Worms. All loot belonged to Lady Proxima. A group of scrum rats, little kids as grimy as Han, if not as bloody, ran by with their take from the evening clutched in their fists.
"Hurry up!" a teen boy shouted. "Or Proxima's gonna have your hide!"
Two teens, a few years younger than Han, came into view, hurting the kids. They pushed them and threatened them, accompanied by their growling Sibian hound. Han despised the creatures, hulking and huge, white as the worm's Grindelid's leader, with fewer legs and more slobber. He hated their affection, which was inevitably drenching, but their animosity was worse. He sneaked into the den after the kids, not wanting to be seen by anyone. They turned down one tunnel, looking for a safe place with a little bit of light to examine their treasures, take a moment to eat something stowed in a pack, or greet friends. Most of the tunnels into the den were completely dark. Humans were not the dominant species of this area, and the photophobic Grindelids hated any natural light. Han had learned to maneuver in the dark, thanks to it, but it wasn't a skill he was proud of having. It was a necessity. He passed the younger rats, hoping they wouldn't notice him. A boy, maybe 8 years old, pulled something shiny from his bag. He showed it to the older girl with him, a girl Han knew as Lex.
"Look what I got! I'll bet Lady Proxima will give me an extra portion for this," he said.
Immediately, Lex snatched it and examined it.
"No, no. She's gonna give that extra portion to me now," she said, and laughed.
The boy grabbed at her, but she held it out of his reach.
"No fair! Give it back!"
Han left the cruel game of keep-away with a boy's dinner hanging in the balance. Kids had to learn to fend for themselves down here. He'd had to. He passed a furnace, glowing golden in the otherwise dismal depths of the tunnels, and jumped when a pair of hands seized his shirt and pulled him behind the furnace. One hand went to his pocket to protect what he had there, while the other balled into a fist, ready to fight. But the assault never came. And instead, lips landed on his and kissed him for all he was worth. Kira, the only person he ever wanted grabbing him. His free hand went to her bobbed brown hair and pulled her closer, forgetting his adventure, his throbbing face and the desperate need to get out of the tunnels as fast as possible. This was what he had come back for. Kira and freedom were the only worthwhile things in this world. She pulled back for air first, her brow creased with worry.
"You were gone too long. I knew something must have gone wrong," she said.
Her blue eyes shone in the light of the furnace as they searched his face, taking in the blood and swelling. She frowned and touched the skin around his eye.
Han grinned slyly and puffed his chest out.
This is nothing. You should see them.
He pulled her closer, and then, at the skeptical look on her face, amended his statement.
Actually, they're fine.
She smiled, his easy tone soothing her as he intended.
Listen, Kilmo stiffed me on the deal right in the middle of the exchange. I'm handing over the coaxium vials when his goons jumped me.
He grinned again. But I showed him.
Yeah? How?
She asked, centimeters from his face, catching on to his urgency and excitement.
Han grinned. Wasn't it obvious?
I ran away.
Then I boosted their speeder.
Kira smirked as if going along with a joke.
We going somewhere?
Han pulled her closer.
Yeah, anywhere you want.
He pulled his hand out of his pocket and showed her a metal cylinder. The seventh cylinder Kilmo had been asking for. Inside was a protected glass vial full of a blue glowing liquid. Coaxium. A rare and expensive raw hyperfuel. A large amount could power starships through the galaxy. This small amount could power 2 scrum rats out of the sewers. Kira gasped.
You held on to one of the vials?
Another group of street kids ran by. A voice floated to his ears.
Han's back!
He groaned. Now word would spread and the worms would be coming for him. He had to act. Kira pulled him deeper into the alcove and held his hand in front of the furnace light to closely examine their prize.
Careful, he said.
This is worth,
she said. Han answered her, picking up the conversation in the comfortable manner of old friends.
500-600 credits? More than you said we'd need,
hope bloomed on her face.
To buy our way out of the control zone.
Han nodded.
Finally get away from Proxima?
Off Corellia. This could work, Han.
Her face was a picture of joy. And at that moment, Han felt like he could do anything.
It will work. You always said one day we were going to get out of here. This is it.
She looked into his eyes.
What are we waiting for?
He kissed her again, quickly, and they were off.
Chapter 2
Kira had 4 plans ready to go, depending on Han and his success or failure with this deal. In a flash, she decided to implement a new 5th plan. Han managed to look adorable and charming, even with his dirty, bloody face swelling up like Lady Proxima on a sunny day. He had opened his mouth for some clever retort or other, but they didn't have time. The rats had already been talking about how Han was back, so Lady Proxima's goons would be looking for them shortly. She grabbed his hand and ran. She knew he would follow. They built up a trust and didn't question each other much anymore. She felt her heart swell as they ran, feeling like this time, maybe this time would be their chance to get free. Kira veered away from a tunnel occupied by more scrum rats, who definitely would have sold them out for an extra quarter portion. She turned down a disused tunnel that she had mapped out looking for fast exits. It was not a tunnel that humans would like to spend a lot of time in. She had wondered if this was by design, or if the Grindelids simply didn't care. This one didn't have the warm glow of a furnace. It did have a particular and significant odor. Waste and rot. Blood and brackish water. The damp ground squelched unpleasantly under their feet, and she pushed on, not thinking about what they were running through. She turned her head to tell him why they were traveling down this particular desolate path, when his face switched from excited hope to despair. She stopped suddenly, and Han immediately crashed into her back, banging his face on the back of her head. He stepped back, swearing and rubbing his already swollen eye. The shape that had stopped them in their tracks let loose a guttural laugh. Kira groaned. Moloch. The hulking brute who sat at the right hand of Lady Proxima. Unlike most of the worms, he was dressed for the elements in an enviro suit. His pale, wrinkled body draped in brown robes, bleached white in patches by the foul toxins that lingered in the lair. He had his vaporizer, the mask that kept his face constantly hydrated and out of the sun, pulled back, and his white face and wrinkled beak squinted at them. Beside them stood Rebolt, a boy who had grown up beside Han and Kira, with the ambition to become head of the Scrum Rats. He had been thwarted time and again by Han and Kira, the latter becoming head girl, favored by Lady Proxima. But that was a blessing she couldn't exploit today. The lady was too smart for that. Rebolt, unfortunately, was Moloch's favorite, probably for the exact reason he couldn't win points with Lady Proxima. He wasn't smart, lacked initiative, and blindly followed orders. Rebolt would never turn on Moloch, simply because he wouldn't be able to figure out how. Currently, he helped Moloch bully whatever rats needed correcting, as Moloch would say. He loved correcting Han and Kira the most.
Han, just the scrum rat we were looking for, Moloch said,
his mouth turning into a dreadful imitation of a smile. Han stepped in front of Kira nonchalantly, his trademark grin pulling at his mouth.
Moloch! Hey, how are you? I'm just on my way to see Lady Proxima. That's where... right now, actually.
He took a step back to where his body bumped Kira's. His hand brushed hers, the deft fingers delivering the vial. She shifted to match his movements and dropped the vial into her pocket.
You have our credits.
Moloch was never one for pleasantries. Han winced ruefully and indicated his bruised face. Kira thought it was a waste of time to try to elicit sympathy. It would never work. But Han always had to try.
Wait till you hear about the night I've had. You won't believe it. I mean, you will believe it, but...
Moloch had heard enough. He turned to Rebolt.
Search him.
Rebolt had pale, acne-scarred skin and a perpetual frown that made even his smiles look menacing. He snarled at Han to hold still. Kira took a step back as Rebolt roughly patted Han down, pulling at his clothes and squeezing the hemlines to see if he had any secret pockets anywhere. Han tried to go with it, placidly letting him search his jacket and trousers, yielding when Rebolt pushed him around. He found Han's tools and tossed them to the ground. Kira slid the vial deeper into her pocket and tried to look properly concerned but not guilty. The good news was that most of the Grindelids had never really gotten good at reading human body language. The humans were sharper, though, so she edged quietly backward into the shadows, hoping that she would go unnoticed. Rebolt frowned, confused. He'd found no vials and no credits when he'd been sure he'd find one or the other on Han. He looked at Moloch for further instructions.
Lady Proxima will know what to do with him,
Moloch said, gesturing at Han. Rebolt grabbed Han by the arms. Kira tensed, ready to run down the tunnel. But Moloch's eyes found her unerringly. The bastards could see in the dark after all, and considered her. Then he grunted, shrugging her off, and she smiled in the dark, free. She had something worth hundreds of credits in her pocket, and Moloch and Lady Proxima were preoccupied with Han. She could run. She could take the vial, leave this planet, and never look back. But Han had returned when he had had a speeder and coaxium. He could have been halfway off the planet by now. She cursed to herself. The bloody noble fool. He had come back for her and gotten caught. Now Lady Proxima was going to sell him, or eat him, or worse. The coaxium was her ticket to freedom now. Her fingers stroked the cool metal in her pocket, and she sighed and turned around. She owed him. She hated owing people.
Well, at least Kira got away, Han thought. She had gotten away with his treasure, which hadn't been in the plan, but he would rather she had it than Lady Proxima. He tried to ignore the hurt he felt that she had left, and focused on the goon dragging him along. Rebolt squeezed Han's arms harder than he had to.
I'm gonna enjoy this, he whispered in Han's face.
Han winced. Your breath, Rebolt. Ugh, it's legendary.
Rebolt spat in his face, ensuring Han would take a fraction of that scent with him wherever he went. The lair was built out of abandoned and outdated habitation cubes, salvaged from an abandoned Corellian building project. They were connected by massive, rusty desalination pipes, but neither the Grindelids nor the humans they raised were clean people. The whole lair smelled of raw sewage, a foulness that was oppressive and nearly impossible to get used to. The scent only intensified nearer to the center, which was Lady Proxima's den. The den was a foul pit in the middle of the disused warehouse. Machinery and tools still lay about, shoved to the side to make room for the watery pit at the center, where Lady Proxima and her young lived. Long ago, her goons had blackened all the windows and befouled the place just so, making it a sweet nest for their queen. Han remembered having to help clean the pool Lady Proxima lived in. The cistern extended deep into the ground, with branching chambers reaching who knew how far beneath the city. Any efforts Han had made to skim filth from the water had been immediately undone the second Lady Proxima resurfaced in the murky pool. The water remained brackish and muddy, with a thin, oily sheen that glowed in the light of the weak bulbs lighting the lair. They filched the electricity from one of the power grids nearby, which made the lair livable for the humans. The depths of the pool remained dark, though, and you could smell the tainted water down the hall. The worst insult to a scrum rat would be to tell someone to go off and drink the lady's water. One did not use this insult when she was within earshot. Rebolt shoved Han into a puddle of sewage water outside the diameter of the lady's pool. Other rats had gathered to see the show, and Han scanned them to see if there was a friendly face. He found none. His captors loosened their grips, focusing on their leader, who was rising from the water like a legendary sea snake. Hideous she was, but also their queen. Lady Proxima was a thick, wrinkled worm, with pale, glistening white skin and a beakish face, and 12 arms, some spindly and some stronger, all ending in claws. She was draped in metal and chains, like a worm who had rolled in metal shavings and then claimed itself royalty. As she opened her beak, the smell in the room got slightly worse. Han winced. Even after years of practice, he couldn't hide his visceral reactions to some things. One young rat screwed up her face too, and was swiftly slapped by one of the older kids. In front of their queen, her servants bent their heads as one, and some of the rats followed. Han simply stood, waiting. Lady Proxima didn't pay attention, looking at Han. She surveyed him up and down, and finally said,
"We are looking worse for wear, boy. What happened?"
Han widened his eyes, trying to look indignant on her behalf. "I'll tell you what happened. They double-crossed you and tried to kill me." Lady Proxima made the hissing, huffing sound that indicated laughter. She didn't believe a word.
"Did they? What about the credits?"
Han worked to keep his voice steady. "They kept it." Lady Proxima nodded.
"And my coaxium vials?"
she asked, her voice tense, foreshadowing a coming storm of rage. The question was rhetorical. She knew her goons would have delivered any returned coaxium that they'd found on him. Han shrugged.
They kept that too, but,"
he added, seeing her swell with anger. He searched around for something to say after the "but," and came up with,
"We learned a valuable lesson.
We can't trust those guys." He smiled, satisfied he'd firmly laid the blame at the feet of the gang who had jumped him. Lady Proxima's volume was rising, the rage surfacing from the depths, just as she had from her pool a moment earlier.
"You expect me to believe you walked away with nothing?"
"Well, I ran away with my life. I think that's something," Han said, expanding his arms and showing her that he was trophy enough, her good little soldier scrum rat. "I mean, to me, that's a lot."
Lady Proxima finally looked away from him, meeting Moloch's eyes to confirm. The hated Grindelid stepped forward and cleared his throat.
"He didn't have anything on him,"
he said, reaching over to pat Han's pockets again to prove they were empty. Lady Proxima's tense overlay was starting to crack. She drew herself up.
"I trusted you with a simple task, and all I'm hearing are excuses."
Pain exploded in Han's midsection as Reavel hit him in the stomach with a rod. He doubled over, fighting back the sudden nausea, his diaphragm protesting violently at having been attacked twice in 1 hour. Han didn't even see Lady Proxima's signal, so for all he knew, Reavel was showing initiative by hitting him. Reavel had a thought on his own for the first time in his life, Han thought. Good for him. Han fell to his knees, landing on all fours in the sludgy puddle. One of his fingers got wedged in between two rocks, distracting him from the pain for a moment. He pulled it free and focused on getting his breath back. Lady Proxima was talking, addressing the crowd that had gathered.
"Pay attention, children. I will give you all my love and protection as I have given it to Han since he first came into my embrace. But there must be consequences for disobedience, or else you never learn."
Han spied Kira in the crowd near the back, watching him with a stony look on her face. He couldn't read her expression, but she had stayed. That was enough. Rebolt hit him again, across the shoulders, and he nearly went face first into the water. He struggled to bring his head up and look at Lady Proxima, who was watching this beating with satisfaction. Han had taken enough beatings for one day. He spat blood into the vile puddle. "You know what?" he said. "I don't think I'm ever gonna learn." Lady Proxima's ugly face screwed up like a pale fist.
"What did you say?"
Han pulled himself to his knees, finally getting his breath back.
"I said..."
Reavel decided then to take more of that initiative he had been attempting and swing at Han a third time, this time toward his head.
Han caught the rod in wet hands and twisted it free from Rebolt's grasp. He turned it around, standing. Now he had a weapon. The shock on the other boy's face before Han hit him with the club was something sweet he would remember for a long time. "Next time somebody hits me, I hit him back," he said, dropping all pretense of trying to grovel and placate. He was done. Lady Proxima roared with fury, and before he could deliver some more deserved strikes to Rebolt, Han found himself looking down the barrel of Moloch's blaster.
"I wonder what you will do when I shoot you," he said,
and for once, Han couldn't think of a clever retort. Moloch's finger tensed, and Han got ready to eat hot blaster fire, but then a slim hand rested on the barrel, pushing it gently from Han's face. Kira had appeared beside him.
"Moloch, wait! Don't!"
she said. She was speaking to Moloch, but her eyes were on Lady Proxima. Around them, scrum rats gasped to see someone openly defy the Queen. Even Moloch wasn't sure what to do, and everyone looked at Lady Proxima for guidance. Lady Proxima looked down at her new irritation. She smiled, and there was nothing kind there. Han knew she had a soft spot for Kira.
"Kira, you poor misguided thing. Remember the silo? We pulled you out of that horror, gave you a home. Don't throw it away for Han. He's not worth it."
Han was worth a lot, he wanted to interject, but figured this was between Kira and Lady Proxima, and he should just stay out of it. Kira put her hand on his shoulder, declaring that she was in this too.
"But he's worth more alive than dead. Whatever he lost on the deal, we'll earn it back. Double. We will make it up to you."
Moloch laughed, his blaster barrel still in Kira's hand.
"Coaxium is valuable. Scrum rats are cheap."
Around them, most of the rats nodded, having been beaten down to understand their lack of worth in the eyes of those who raised them. A spare few looked sullen or outright angry at the statement. Those might be the ones to get out some day. Lady Proxima nodded along with Moloch.
"Too late for haggling. I have no choice but to kill him."
She looked at Kira thoughtfully.
"Maybe I'll sell you. You may still be worth a few credits."
Kira opened her mouth to say something she probably couldn't take back, and Han took that opportunity to raise his hand above his head.
"All right, everybody, stand back!"
he shouted. He brandished the thing in his hand. Everyone around him shrank back, wise to the variety of weapons one might hide on their person, even though they all should have probably remembered he'd been searched. Lady Proxima, unfortunately, remembered. She didn't flinch.
"What's that supposed to be?"
"This is a thermal detonator,"
Han said, his voice confident and strong. He moved his thumb and made a subtle clicking noise.
"That I just armed."
Lady Proxima was having none of it. She crossed her non-dominant arms.
"That's a rock."
Han grasped his rock tighter. "No, it's not." Lady Proxima twitched in her pool, losing patience.
"Yes, it is. You just made a clicking sound with your mouth. Is that all you got, child?"
"Please tell me this isn't your plan," Kira said, her voice low.
Found out, Han did the only thing left he could think of.
"No,"
he said.
"This is!"
And he threw the rock at one of the blackened windows. The rock sailed up and through the glass with a satisfying crash. Black shards showered some of the scrum rats below, causing them to scream in surprise and pain. But those screams were nothing like the sound that came from Lady Proxima. In the time Han had been in the tunnels,
The sun had risen to show its full glory on the gray city, and it even managed to force its way into the slums. Now, with the black barrier gone, it flooded into the room that it hadn't touched in years, illuminating Lady Proxima like a halo. Her white, grindled skin, and that of her subordinates not dressed in enviro suits, blistered immediately, sizzling, popping, and oozing. She shrieked louder than Han had ever heard, writhing to escape from the light piercing her skin. She finally dived into the rusty water, getting away from the light and the solace of her lair, leaving white blood blooming in the dark water behind her. The odor of cooking Grindelid, something Han had hoped to never smell, burned his nostrils. He coughed once, and didn't wait any longer to see who else was badly injured. He grabbed Kira's hand, and they ran.
Chapter 3.
At first, Kira thought they'd lucked out, and no one was following them. The rats were too frightened, and the uninjured Grindelids would be seeing to their mistress and their fallen comrades. Light had flooded the room, and nearly all of the photophobic beings had been hit by the beam. Except Rebolt was human, and Moloch had immediately activated the Envirosuit mask, which rapidly covered his face, and both of them would be intent on killing Han and Kira. If you betrayed the white worms as they had, you didn't expect forgiveness. No one who injured the lady had ever lived.
"You stayed,"
Han said, looking over at her and grinning. They pushed past a young rat walking the tunnels, counting his night's take and completely unaware of the chaos in Lady Proxima's vicinity. He shouted in protest when they made him drop all the items he'd pocketed.
"Yes," Kira said. "And I'm wondering if that was smart. Do you have an exit planned?"
"Of course."
"Is it anything more complex than run to your lifted speeder and get out of here?"
"You know me so well," he said, and actually winked at her.
They didn't have time for any side tunnels or sneaky ways out this time. They headed straight for the outside door, shouldering the current guard, Psyche, aside. He and Rebolt were the keepers of the massive white hounds, creatures that would attack anything with such gusto that their teeth often broke, which was fine with them, because their teeth regenerated, as if the hounds weren't terrifying enough. Psyche's hound, asleep on the ground beside him, woke up with a snarl. But Kira slammed the door in their faces and turned over a barrel to slow their movement. Whatever was inside splashed to the ground and covered it, and Kira hoped the rising stench would be enough to distract the hounds. Han points to the speeder. It was obviously lifted. Nothing that nice would be seen in their part of town. The paint was a deep purple, almost blue, and it was unmarked. She wanted to ask how he had managed to lift it from under Kilmo's nose, but they heard the hound snarl behind them. "Questions later, then," she decided, and they hopped in. She took a moment to run her hand over the console, almost stroking it. An M68. Not bad.
"Nice, right?"
"I love it. But you know we'll probably have to sell it, right?"
Han started the engine and winced, as if she'd hit him right in the heart, but didn't contradict her. Two seats on a transport off the planet would be expensive enough. Vehicle transport was out of the question if they wanted to eat wherever they ended up. Kira saw his golden dice hanging from the windscreen and smiled.
"We'll enjoy it while we can," she said.
And Han hit the accelerator. The speeder turned 180 degrees and shot forward, slamming them back in their seats. Behind them, shouts and barking hounds receded in the distance, and they were away, their cheers of victory whipped away by the wind. "There's a Starliner leaving from Coronet Spaceport."
"We're gonna be on it," Han said over the sound of the engines.
"We can bribe our way through the checkpoint."
Good. They had a destination.
Kira was honestly surprised he'd thought that far ahead. She pulled the vial from her pocket and examined it, turning it in her fingers. It was hard to believe that something so small would fetch such a high price.
"This'll have to be enough to get us through the Imperial checkpoint without ID chips," she said doubtfully.
Han snorted.
"You kidding? That's grade-A refined coaxium, worth at least 700 credits."
He grinned, all cocky confidence again. She glanced sideways at him.
"You said 500 or 600,
she reminded him.
"So what is it?"
Han shrugged. He never was one for precise measurements. He got a faraway look in his eye, even as he expertly maneuvered around the trash, vehicles, and droids in their way.
"Once we're through, we're free."
He said the word like it was a precious gem on the tip of his tongue. "I'm gonna be a pilot." Kira nodded, taking up the thread.
"We'll get our own ship, go anywhere we want, and never have to take orders or be kicked around by anybody.
Ever." Han finished, and turned a sharp left, and swerved to avoid a protocol droid
who chattered something disapproving at them as they left it in the dust.
"Ever,"
she repeated, and smiled at him. The kiss in the hallway had been impulsive, and she and Han had always lived for the moment. But now, maybe she could actually consider that she and Han might have a tomorrow. His cocky grin turned to something wider, and he looked happy for a moment. Then Moloch's truck speaker hit them from behind.
"Damn!"
Han said through clenched teeth.
"Thought we'd get a little more of a head start."
The speeder wobbled from side to side from the collision before he could steady it. Kira turned around in her seat, dark hair whipping past her face.
"Moloch!" she said. "Faster!"
Moloch, Rebolt, and Syke had jumped into Moloch's modified, oft in need of repairs, truck speeder. A vehicle that didn't have the best acceleration, but its anti-gravity generator was a lot stronger than the classic land speeders. And it certainly could pack a punch when it got to full speed. Han slammed on the accelerator, but the road widened, and Moloch pulled up beside them. Beside the engine, Moloch had created a custom-made pen for the hounds. Right now, it was even with Han's head, and the beasts snarled and leapt at their bars to get at him. Moloch yelled something at them, but the sound of the wind and the hounds drowned him out. Moloch bumped them again, knocking the speeder to the side. Han swore and gripped the controls harder. This thing was meant for street racing, not demolition competitions. He looked around for a place to lose Moloch. He veered down a tight alley, lined with boxes and machinery. A perfect needle to thread to lose the huge truck behind them, he thought. They were actually gaining ground and edging away from Moloch until they caught the interest of an Imperial patrol trooper as they sped past. Han's luck was wearing thin, but he could handle Imperial patrol troopers. They just wanted to arrest you, while thugs like Moloch and Kilmo wanted you dead. They would be fine. He checked behind him after they passed the trooper, hoping they wouldn't notice. But they did. Now he and Kira had two tails. One, a large truck speeder he was fairly sure he could lose, and a nimble, swift speeder bike that would be a little harder. Still, the speeder couldn't dodge what it couldn't see. Ahead of them, droids were unloading a cart and stacking their material in the street. If someone had been moving at a reasonable pace, they could easily have avoided it. But these poor droids were on Corellia, and it was foolish to think the street was a safe place for, well, anything. Han edged to the left. Kira looked ahead, then at him, and then back to the obstacles in the road.
"Han," she asked, "do you know what you're doing?"
He slammed a lever to throw the speeder into a lower gear as the trooper sped up behind him. The Imperial waved at him to pull over, and he obliged, swerving to the right at the last moment to clip the edge of the rubble in the road, but leaving the patrol trooper no time at all to dodge. The speeder bike went straight into it, flipping several times in the air before landing on the road, with Moloch roaring by after it landed. Han relaxed a fraction. One threat down.
The road widened again, and he took a moment to appreciate the speeder's handling. Now that he had room to drift into turns and let the vehicle accelerate, he felt a lot more confident. Han gunned the engine, but Moloch still managed to roar up behind them. What did they put in the engine of that truck speeder? It shouldn't be able to move like that. It bumped them again, as if to remind them they weren't free yet. That stinger's fast! Han grumbled, fixated on the road. Kira turned to look over her shoulder again.
But we're faster, right?
She asked, the wind almost taking away her voice. Han searched the console. He hadn't driven this model speeder before, and hoped it had some features he hadn't found yet. He fiddled with a switch. I hope so!
Han!
Kira grabbed his shoulder. He was about to intersect with a fish market. He swerved hard to the left. He hoped he would hear the sound of the truck plowing into liters and liters of fish, but Moloch made the turn easily. He gritted his teeth. It's okay. I know a few tricks Moloch hasn't seen. He tapped the console, hoping the answer would appear in lights. It cheerfully told him that engines were running at 95%, and at this speed he would be due for more fuel in approximately 1 hour. Not the information he needed right now. The road narrowed again as they approached an intersection of bridges, one of them heading toward the Santh shipyards. A half-built Star Destroyer hovered in the construction anti-gravity field on the far end. Huge white sensor globes suspended by cranes in the nearest factory.
Good thinking! Kira shouted. We'll lose them in the shipyard!
Kira grabbed his arm to get his attention back on the road. They reached the hub, where most speeders slowed down to avoid horrific, fiery death. Another larger speeder was barreling toward them. But Han decelerated a fraction, then jerked the controls to the left and hit the accelerator again, making a sharp turn and heading for the shipyard. Kira held on tight, her hair flying. Once he had made the turn, he let out his breath.
Yes! That's exactly what I was thinking before you said it.
He didn't need to see her face. He could hear the suspicion.
You don't have a plan, do you?
He shrugged.
I've got lots of plans. I'm just not married to any one of them, Han said, checking on Moloch over his left shoulder.
The goon had made the turn nearly as fast as he had. He had a brief flash of regret that he would never have a chance to inspect that truck speeder to see what it had under the hood aside from snarling hounds. But there were bigger things to regret and worry about right now. He glanced at Kira.
And I'm open to suggestions, by the way, he added.
They were nearing the shipyards now. Vehicles and cranes littered the area directly in front of the warehouses. The under-construction Star Destroyer hovered nearby, and he could nearly feel the gravity of the great ship pulling at him. Kira did a quick survey of everything. She pointed.
Make a left! Into the building!
He obeyed, gripping the controls and swinging a wide turn. He dodged a few speeders and walkers on his way, easily weaving in and out, and headed into the building. Unlike Lady Proxima's lair, this was a working warehouse, and workers and droids were already beginning their day. Sparks showered down from welders suspended high in the air, and Han quickly brushed some out of his